Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
The Market Musings Podcast. With Fairbairn and Russell.
Hello and welcome to the Market Musings podcast, where today our guest Kyle Bennett, the head of operations at Aura Carbon, is joining us for the first time. Good to be talking to you. Kyle, how are you doing? Thank you for joining us.
I'm well, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for coming on. And Kenny, of course, is joining us. Kenny, everything good with you?
Yeah, apart from the weather, as usual in Scotland, it's cold, dark, blowing a gale and miserable. But I'm assuming that it's probably a bit like it's Canada you're calling from today. Kyle, it's probably very similar to your weather,
yeah,
I'd imagine.
It sounded like, Kenny, was you described home. That's for sure the Pacific coast, of Pacific Northwest of Canada.
Okay.
Yeah. Winter has arrived, so it has definitely in this country with a bye. Yeah. So, but good stuff. No, it's great to have you on the podcast, Kyle. And you know, we're talking off air about, you know, we believe that, you know, people make projects that the best projects in the world, and you don't have the right people behind them, then it will never work. So people invest in people. So what we like to do in this podcast is almost get a plotted history of Kyle Bennett. You know, where you came from. You know, back as far as you want, school, early education, you know, career, successes, failures, turning points, what motivates you. You know, it's almost like you've got the floor for the first 10, 15 minutes just to take us in your life journey, almost up to the point where you get involved with Aura, and then we can start talking about the carbon market and stuff like that. So really, the floor is yours for the next 10, 15 minutes, Kyle, and we'll jump in with any questions at an appropriate time.
Yeah, sure. Well, I guess, you know, this project, this Aura Carbon project, it's been a journey in my career to get to this point. And I think there's been so many things that have happened that have really shaped my time leading up to it. Really, you know, I started my career. I graduated from the University of Victoria with a BSc in biology. And I've always had this keen passion for understanding living things and cycles in science. You know, I spend a lot of time just in my personal life reading about it. I had during my university years, I had jobs that took me into the outdoors, into nature. And so it's been a huge part of my life. And I think Aura really is the first time that I've been able to meld that in to what I do as a career. But before I got here, you know, I spent a lot of time in technology. Really, the last 15, 20 years have been in the technology industry, whether it's been in sales or managed services or kind of relationship management, strategic planning. That's where I've really kind of cut my teeth. You know, I spent a lot of my formative time, sort of 5 years at Apple in various leadership roles, focusing on running retail operations and doing strategic planning with other businesses and of course, partnering them with Apple equipment. But from, and I really, I think in that time, that Apple's a great almost MBA, if you will, to learn about how to run a business. I mean, no one does it better than them. And in that time, I really sort of found, I think, my own personal leadership style, how I want to create a great place for my team to succeed, have them really bought into the vision of what we're doing, the higher purpose of what we're doing. You know, things changed. I loved my time at Apple, but I was starting a family. And so I moved a little closer to home. And that meant I had to leave there. And in that time, I got into e-commerce, to be honest with you. So I spent a few years as the director of operations at a company called Pixel Union. And Pixel Union is an interesting company, really focused mainly on the Shopify space, and had an agency that worked with a lot of leading brands and organizations, and then also worked with a lot of small merchants. And you know, in that time, I think what I came to understand was just the importance of product and experience. I took a lot of that from Apple, but really now had that time to sort of form it, you know, put that Apple MBA to test. And you know, Pixel Union had a number of different products. As I mentioned, the agency product where we were building e-commerce sites for brands, but also some apps that allowed smaller merchants to succeed with the Shopify platform. And then if you've been with Shopify for a while, you would know Pixel Union mainly for its themes. But with across this diverse product portfolio, it really needed to have a kind of cohesive brand experience built. What I brought in there was, and what I think was largely a success was a customer success team. So that's a team that is really focused on education and enablement in the product and weaving that into the experience. So I think a lot of people will say when they talk about customer success, it has to live at every level of the organization. And that's what I did at Pixel Union. We really had quite a great success to keep using that word in enabling merchants to use all kinds of facets of Pixel Union's products and really see tremendous results on the Shopify platform. So it might have been introducing them to Pixel Union through a theme and then kind of moving them into the app space. And then when they've grown and you've helped them grow, you've helped educate them about how to win with Shopify and how to win with the Pixel Union apps, it's time to graduate them to that agency experience where they are building a more bespoke e-commerce site. I had a lot of fun at Pixel Union. I really enjoyed my time there. And there was another company in the same family that they asked me to help out at. And so after 3-ish years at Pixel Union, I moved on to Stamped.io, which is, again, an app focused mainly on Shopify merchants, but a multi-channel marketing platform. And just... 75,000 customers, which was just a ludicrous number, and the biggest and smallest that you could imagine. So it was really such a great way to see how big organizations and small organizations have often the very same problems, but different solutions. And my role there in sales and partnerships was about building those kind of relationships to solve each of those organizations' problems with Stamped as a solution, but in a different kind of application or operation. Stamped really focused on building trust through reviews and repeat customers through a loyalty program. And I grew a sales team there that was really just kind of one person. When Stamped was acquired by the Pixel Union sort of group of companies. It was really sort of eight people around a table in Singapore and just one salesperson. And so I was managing an all remote team spread across North America and in fact across the world. And we really grew that in the end. When I left for this, for my next opportunity, which was in the carbon space, we'd grown that team to be 10 people and a significant sort of contributor to Stamps revenue. Enterprise sales went from just a small kind of slice to sort of 25% of Stamps quarterly revenue. And it was just great to see impact. You know, I think that's one of my favorite parts about anything that I do is it's, you know, it's nice to sell things. It's nice to talk to people and build those relationships. But what's truly gratifying is to see the impact of your contributions to them winning. And I really got to see that at Stamp. That was perhaps one of the most fulfilling parts of it.
So Stamp, yeah. Sorry, that was after Pixel, was it?
Yeah, that was after Pixel Union. Same group of companies. So it was a very kind of natural move to Stamp. But that was, you know, five kind of intense years in the e-commerce space. And of course, all of that happens sort of centered around, you know, March, beginning of March of 2020. And I think we all know how e-commerce sort of took off at that time during the pandemic. So it was a crazy, crazy busy time. Just, you know, everyone rushing to get stores online and save their businesses, to be perfectly frank. You know, it was just gratifying to be able to contribute to that, whether it was a large brand or a small business that had never been online before.
Go on, Kenny.
So yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, the one thing that just jumps out at me right away, Kyle, is, you know, what was the transition from a degree in biology and then straight into sort of service manager role with Apple? It seems quite a jump from various levels.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, my very first job at age 15 was in a retail computer store selling Apple equipment, I'll age myself here in the late 90s. And, my family's always been an Apple family. My father would disown me if I bought a Windows PC. You know, it wasn't an easy time to sell Apple equipment in the 90s. They were a very different company, but, I always had, in addition to that interest in science, an interest in technology. And so when I came out of university and I was sort of like, well, what am I going to do with this Bachelor of Science in biology? I kind of just fell back on the things that I had been doing in tech and just kept going from there. And I think, you know, the science degree teaches you that critical thinking, that experimentation, that I use every day. But tech was always sort of plan B. And to be frank, working for Apple was always kind of plan B. And that's really how it got started. I know it's a bit of a bizarre kind of jump.
So it's all right. I'm in plan K and I'm 50 years old. So you've got a bit, you know, a bit to catch up in me. I've had various careers.
Yeah, thank you.
So I have. And I've always done investing and stuff in the background. And I've kind of, in later life, finally come back to it. Maybe I should have started it in earlier life, but sometimes the journey's better than the destination. So as you've just got to accept what happens in life. I mean, it sounds like you've had quite a successful career, but there must have been some points where, I mean, I think you learn more from some failures in business because you can take
100%
yourself and you can go away and, you know, you usually sulk for a couple of weeks and then you instantly almost write down what went wrong. Is there a moment in your life where you put that kind of that challenge or that kind of?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there so many opportunities, I think, for learning. The thing that I like to take from those failures is I just don't want to repeat them. And I've had some goodies along the way. One that certainly stands out I'll come back to that Apple experience. I would often run launches in one of the stores that I was working through, and I bungled that launch badly. I'll give the very short version of the story, but essentially what happened was, through a bit of miscommunication, I sent over 300 people in line for an iPhone packing without an iPhone, because my understanding was that we were sold out of iPhones when we very much weren't. And, you know, in traditional Apple fashion, that sort of created a lot of excitement. Oh my gosh, sold out of iPhones. And that kind of worked its way up the chain to what was sort of later described to me to get to some pretty important people down in California, that this store in Vancouver was sold out of iPhones. And that was, you know, a big dose of humble pie. And certainly what I learned from that was, oh my gosh, well, first off, I'm going to get on the phone. I'm going to call every business, every customer I know and say, hey, we still got them. Like, come on down. But it really taught me the value of slowing down to speed up, if that makes any sense. You know, often we're working so quickly to get things done, you know, especially think about Aura as we head towards launch here. You know, we have all these deadlines. And if we don't just sort of step back and take a breath and reflect on where we've come from and what our destination is, often we don't end up where we're expecting and we make mistakes. And I really taught me that value of just take a breath, look at, reconfirm what your vision and your destination is here, and make sure you're on the right track. And I really encourage my team to do that as much as possible, and just reflect. And honestly, when we look at how we sort of measure our own success and chart progress, I've learned that building in that reflection time is just so key. Otherwise, you can kind of get to the end of a big sprint and just wonder what happened and was it worth it?
Mm, yeah, indeed. I mean, your time there. So, I mean, if I go back over your career there, you effectively almost straight after sort of school, you went to work for Apple in a smaller role, and then you got the bigger role there at Apple for about 5 years before you then went on to Pixel Union and then Stamp, and that's what led you to where you are now, effectively. Is that kind of right?
Yeah, I spent a bunch of time with small businesses in the Apple reseller community, and then from that moved directly to working with Apple, and then on to I had a couple startup stops between Apple and Pixel Union, but largely then into the e-commerce space. That's right, Mark.
I mean, one of the things I picked up from what you said about Apple then, it's something they push all the time. It's product and experience, isn't it? It's all about the design and the product that is designed around people and what it is that the customer is demanding there. And then, of course, your e-commerce experience there. You've talked quite passionately there about the customer experience and making sure that the customer has a good experience. So these two elements, I feel, lead quite well into where you are now, because of course Aura has a product, but more importantly, it has to have a good user experience, because it's a product, but it's on an app, so it's a software product. But yeah, it's more of an experience rather than a physical product. I mean, what are some of the key things you perhaps learn from both of those elements in terms of sort of, let's say, product design, product experience, and at the same time the customer experience that you want to give to customers now you're in Aura?
Yeah, I mean, I think you really hit the nail on the head in terms of it's a customer-centric experience. And what, you know, we'll delve in a little bit deeper to what Aura does, but there's certainly, it's not the easiest thing to wrap your head around. And so what I took from those experiences in e-commerce with Pixel Union, with Stamped, and then from that time at Apple is just how key an easy customer experience is to creating good outcomes. And then on top of that, it's about finding little moments of joy in that customer experience. It can't just be boring. It can't just do its job. It needs to surprise and delight. And I think when you have those little moments sort of hidden intentionally but unexpectedly within a product for a customer, that's what keeps them coming back, right? They want to experience that joy. They want that ease of use. they want something that's fun and exciting. And those, when you look at honestly stamp product or Apple products for sure, there are those little moments of surprise, those little sort of joys of, oh, I didn't know it could do this, or wow, this just made my life so much easier. And so I've really brought that into how the Aura experience, the Aura app is designed, and how we talk about it. And that's kind of, you know, we want to have an impact in climate change with the Aura product. And to do that, people have to use it, and sort of keep them coming back and using it. It has to be exciting. It has to be fun, and it has to be easy.
So is it fair to say you've only really got one shot at this? Are you, maybe that's a bit harsh, but you know, if the users come on and have a bad experience, they might try again, but you've really got to get them on the first go.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. One shot, maybe a couple, is probably the fair way of saying it. Because I think there are, there's the social vision of and mission of fighting climate change, and that's going to attract a lot of people. And that's not an easy problem to wrap your arms around. So likely, you know, we'll have customers who kind of stick with it a little bit for that. But as you say, I think the attention span is short. And there's so many different apps and experiences for people to have that we really want to nail it first try.
I mean, yeah, I'm thinking we'll talk about carbon credits in a moment and what they are and what they could be for the future. I mean, it has vibes to me of, you know, perhaps the crypto craze, because it's a similar sort of idea. It's an asset class, it's a digital asset class there. And I do recall, you know, you'll always get the hardcore sort of investors who, there was some ways to get hold of cryptocurrency was ridiculous, the way you had to go and exchange,
sure,
and go on different chains. It was absolutely crazy. And then reversing that process to get your money out. People will do it who are passionate about it. There'll always be those people. But for the general masses to adapt, there needs to be that almost one click access to, you know, look at this.
Absolutely.
Robin Hood, for example. Why is that so popular?
Absolutely.
But it's like almost a one click access thing. No, okay, it's not the best deal, but you know, you don't have to do reams of paperwork to open a broker account, call a broker to do a trade. So it's taking down those barriers to entry. And I get the impression that's what, you know, talking to of course, the CEO of Aura, whose name, sorry, escapes me.
Right,
Mike.
Of course, Mike. Yeah, that's really what he was talking about, taking down barriers to entry. So that's clearly something you want to really focus on, because I know I and probably a few others are eagerly awaiting the launch of the app and dying to try it out. But you're just waiting until it's all absolutely tickety boo, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly right. And I think, you know, Robinhood's actually a strong parallel, because it's not just the ease of experience that they do, it's the education aspect. Like, they spend a lot of time educating their customers about equities, about stocks. And we're really trying to focus on that same thing at Aura. So, you know, I have a podcast called Offtakes, where we talk about demystifying the voluntary carbon market. And really trying to get people into the conversation, because one of the things I learned from my biology degree is that language is often the barrier to entry for any new thing. And the carbon market is the same thing. And so for people to understand it and feel comfortable enough to get started, to then experience that excitement and joy, they have to be educated a bit about all these different terms that they've maybe only heard kind of often a news story, but they've never really kind of understood. And you know, that those are really the two goals, right? With Aura, we want it to be a great, seamless, easy, fun experience. We also want people to arrive at you know, whether it's the podcast or whether it is our social media, and leave with something that they hadn't known today until they got there. So I think education is a huge part of making sure that everything is perfect as well. People need to know about what the carbon market is and how it has an impact and how they can participate. And right now, that's fairly opaque, right? It's not an easy thing to understand. It takes a fair amount of research to even get a base level understanding of what the carbon market is and how to participate. And frankly, as a regular individual, you can't.
And would you plan on doing this, through the app and through the website, through the podcast, through a number of means all associated with
Exactly. Yeah. All channels that we can. So social media, you know, TikTok, YouTube, the podcast, longer form content within the app and then on the website. People need to learn about this. And we don't want that to be a barrier, right? We don't want that language to be a barrier. So by setting them up with this kind of stuff ahead of time, I think that just reduces those barriers to entry.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about understanding carbon credits there. So, I mean, I think before we just sort of, you know, touch obviously Aura, it'd be good perhaps maybe just for 5 minutes to give a kind of a high level overview of the carbon, you know, what are carbon credits, you know, and what is the market and why have all of a sudden they, you know, became hot property, you know, everybody's trying to offset their footprint, especially the majors.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that, you know, the story of carbon credits is they've been around for a while, and a lot of people have heard that term without understanding exactly what it means. At its sort of easiest kind of description or definition, a carbon credit represents 1 ton of carbon dioxide or its equivalent emission in another greenhouse gas like methane. And that credit, in fact, is a commodity. It's like a tradable certificate that allows the holder, typically a corporation, to emit that 1 ton. There's many different markets around the world. But I think what people, when you first talk about carbon credits, kind of equate it to is like a cap and trade framework where governments have set this kind of maximum amount of pollution or greenhouse gases that a certain sector or company may be able to emit. And if they're above that, they have to go to another company to buy their emissions. And if they're below that, they can sell their unused emissions to another company. So like probably the most famous example of this would be Tesla, who makes quite a bit of money every quarter in terms of unused emissions credits, because they power a lot of their factories with renewable energy and so forth, and they sell those to other automobile manufacturers. So in China, for example, Tesla's sold a lot of their unused emission credits to Volkswagen, and so that's the cap and trade framework. You emit less, you can take that extra, you can sell it. And then there's also carbon offset projects. So these are what we sort of consider the voluntary carbon market. And those offset projects they're a really diverse group of projects around the world. They can be all kinds of different things. It could be a protected forest. It could be a new forest that's planted. It could be a biochar plant. It could be a soil management system for farmers. It's a really diverse group of projects, but the end result is that they are either avoiding the release of carbon dioxide or another emission, or they're in fact removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. And so they create credits that companies that don't have legislated caps, like a Google or an Apple even, they still want to offset their emissions. And so then they return to these projects to buy credits. And that's how they get to kind of their net zero or carbon neutral goal.
So you've got carbon offset, which is what you just described there. It's either avoiding CO2 or removing it from the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And what was the other one called where, for example, Tesla gets carbon credits?
Yeah, so that's the what we would call the compliance market. So it's a cap and trade system where they have a legislated amount of emissions that they can produce, and if they're under that, they can sell the excess to another organization.
Oh, I see. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so Tesla would have a cap, but they're under it all the time because they're using a lot of renewable energy. Is it the fact that they make electric vehicles also helping them as well? Does that give them any?
No, I don't.
No,
no. Okay. It's really, and that sort of gets to like the different scopes of emissions, but the carbon, the cap and trade framework doesn't focus on the end use of a product. It's more about a company's operations, manufacturing. Operations. So
That makes sense. And how, what are these credits and how are they given to, for example, Tesla? Is that from the government level or some body that is legislating all of this?
Right. So in the cap and trade system with the Tesla example, those are government frameworks. And sometimes they have third party entities run those markets. The EU has a significant cap and trade market. And so they've received those credits to be able to sell because of a government run market that said, hey, yeah, you're under this amount. You can do with that excess emissions cap, whatever you like. And then on the voluntary side, there are a series of what are called registries, which are third-party entities that sort of track the performance of different offset projects around the world, create the frameworks or the standards that they have to adhere to be able to say that they're doing these kind of things. And then typically those projects then list their credits with either an exchange or with a broker. Sometimes there's a lot of bespoke agreements where you have companies going directly to a project saying, look, we'll fund your project to protect this forest in your country, and you give us all the carbon offsets from that.
Right. Okay. And that's done by a governing, some kind of body that's looking after that. And then
in the voluntary market, there's a little bit of both. There's those registries, but then there's also kind of bespoke agreements. But the important thing to understand is that the offset projects generally all have to be registered with a registry that is verifying the science behind the outcome of the project.
Okay. And then carbon credits created and then given to the company. Is that how it works? So they got a physical.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right.
And then those companies hold those credits in a portfolio. And what they do is they retire those against emissions from a given year.
I see. Okay. And so, and they'll be digital, presumably. So it's just a digital record of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Exactly.
And then these effectively can then be traded, effectively an asset class that can be traded on.
Correct.
An exchange, which as I understand at the moment is happening. Well, as you've just said, you know, Tesla are able to sell a lot of theirs. So it's happening amongst big organizations.
Yeah. So,
it's
so they're
not possible for the small individual to actually access that at the moment.
Correct. Yeah. So there are exchanges for the regulated or compliance market, the cap and trade framework. And then there are also exchanges for the voluntary market. Mm. But as an individual investor, you haven't been able to access either of those things. Okay. They're really just the domains of commodity traders and large corporations and even countries.
And does the price of these carbon, so you said one carbon credit is one ton of carbon. So that's quite simple to understand. That's all it is. It's not pounds, it's not euros, it's not yen. It's one carbon credit is one ton of carbon. So it's basically one price for one carbon credit. How does the price?
Well, the price fluctuate? Not exactly. So the ton is the amount, the quantity. I think you could maybe sort of make the analogy that one ton is the same as like a barrel of oil. But the price is going to fluctuate depending on where that carbon has come from, maybe the underlying offset or methodology that's used. So just to use an example from the voluntary market, you know, you've got, say, an avoided deforestation project. It's going to trade anywhere from $1.50 US to all the way up to maybe $12 US per ton. Depending on where it's come from and the methodology that's been used to certify it. And that's an avoidance credit. And then you have, say, a removal credit, something that's actually taking already emitted carbon dioxide back out of the atmosphere in a product like biochar. And depending on where that's coming from, it's going to have a premium, but biochar starts more at like $100, $120 US a ton. And okay. and that's just because of one, the underlying economics of bringing that project online tends to be that the removal ones are more expensive because you have to set them up. There's a lot of legwork that has to happen. And then two, right now, just to get into a little bit of a market dynamic discussion, we see avoidance credits trading at a discount in comparison to removal. Removal is a more, I think, interesting topic for a lot of end users of carbon credits to sort of pursue, because it is like, it's really easy to say, look, we took this one ton out of the atmosphere, and that's how we are offsetting our emissions as a company. So,
there are lots projects.
Yeah. Yes, very much credits, so.
Depending on what they are, what they're doing, the methodology behind it. Okay. And they will attract different premiums.
Correct.
It's a bit like a whiskey market, Mark. You can get cheap whiskey or you can get a 50-year-old malt.
totally.
That's the best way to describe it, and you'll
True. Well, I'm thinking about almost, you know, crypto. You know, you have all these different crypto coins, and behind that was a technology that did something, and some are more valuable than others. Maybe as another analogy.
Yeah, that's a perfect analogy, okay. And I think, you know, for sure, there are certain chains that are more successful. You know, maybe have lower gas fees or faster. Sure. Than others, and or more modern technology behind them, and so they're starting to trade at a premium versus, say, like an older coin. You know, in the whiskey example, I think, you know, much like Kenny probably wouldn't be caught dead drinking cheap whiskey, being from Scotland. I think when companies are buying credits, they very much want to skew towards quality, because often they're touting the fact that they've purchased these credits, and they're putting that in their annual reports, and they don't want to have what turns out to be a really low quality credit as something that they used to offset their emissions with, because that honestly, that opens them to just a lot of public criticism.
Indeed. Yeah, indeed. I mean, this is fascinating, and I think this topic is, you know, you could talk quite a lot about it, and I think the whole topic is really fascinating, and I try to explain it to people, and some people kind of get it, but, you know, I get it, and I get the excitement around it, but I struggle to kind of, if someone doesn't sort of feel that same excitement as I do, oh, I can see an opportunity there, then I find it quite hard to articulate it, and I think other people would as well. It's almost like crypto. You can kind of get the opportunity, but to try and articulate it, or to orange pill someone, they used to say, wasn't it? You know, it's very difficult, I think, sometimes to try and articulate the actual, you know, value behind it, or why someone who doesn't quite understand the opportunity. But I think there's a huge opportunity here, because we're going down the whole carbon zero, net zero route. These carbon credits are being traded at the moment by big corporations, and I think it's only going to become even more prevalent. And I mean, we could talk quite a lot, I think, about all the different carbon asset classes there and different projects, but it's probably something on its own, as you say, more of an educational piece about different areas of carbon credits. I wonder, before we talk about Aura and what the platform is going to do, of course the target audience here is the private investor. So why would the private investor or any individual want to trade in carbon credits? Is it simply, you know, a speculative investment class like cryptocurrency was, for example?
Yeah, I think the analogy to crypto is got some challenges, but it's not too far off. It is a speculative investment class, but there's very real demand. And I think that is one of the things that's, I'm not talking ill of crypto here, but that's one of the things that sort of sets it apart. Like, there is an end purpose for these carbon credits. And there's also very real markets already for them. So if you think about the compliance market, coming back to that cap and trade, the value of the total global markets for cap and trade is about 850 billion euros in 2022. So it's really quite significant. And then for the voluntary carbon market in 2022, it's about a value of 2 billion. So it's growing. It hasn't been around as long as cap and trade. But then when you think about what's the end purpose of this, right? Like, and that's why I keep coming back to these commodity, like more standard commodities like soybeans or oil or gold. someone wants to buy that and use it for something at the end. And the end use for a carbon credit is to retire against emissions, to offset those emissions and get us to zero. And so you have all these companies and organizations around the world that have made these commitments to be net zero or carbon neutral by 2030, by 2050, what have you. And the fact of the matter is there's really not enough. There's just not enough carbon credits to help people get there. And look, I'll take a pause to say companies should also be focused on driving down emissions in their supply chains. It shouldn't just be a story of carbon credits. But in 2021, there was over 144 million tons of offsets that were retired. And that was up 50% from the year previous. But if you think about just the amount that, say, the Fortune 500 emits on an annual basis, they emit 5 gigatons of CO2. And 40% of them have committed to being carbon neutral or net zero by 2030. And so even if you think about, like, I want to say issuances, like the new amount of credits coming online in 2022 was about 250 million tons. We're just like, it's a classic supply and demand problem. And so there is that opportunity to speculate, and very likely what we'll see is the value go up because companies have made these commitments and they can't get all of the carbon dioxide out of their supply chain quickly enough. The technology doesn't exist. It's just not possible. And so they have to turn to some other means in order to achieve those commitments. And that other means, quite frankly, is offsetting.
And would you say, just a final point on this before we can talk about Aura for 5 minutes, but I'm trying to think of other investment classes. I mean, if we're talking about sort of expecting the value to go up, then, you know, buying sort of, you know, dollar cost averaging gold, for example, you know, buying a gold sovereign or whatever, or a US gold coin every month or something, you know, long-term investment generally expected to go up in value, a safe bet. Is that the kind of sort of return we're looking for here? Is really a buy on expectation that they're going to get more valuable, or are there other benefits that can come off of them as well? I mean, is there like payouts, or, you know, I'm not saying dividend equivalent, but what would be the kind of, yeah, is it a buy and hold kind of scenario, or is there a trader's market? Just think about the different ways we, you know, they can be used.
Yeah, I would say that there isn't a dividend paid. And when you talked about sort of describing crypto to people and either they get it or they don't, you know, that's sort of this thing with carbon as well. And certainly why we're trying to educate. It isn't really a market that you would sort of buy like one ton a month and kind of go. You want to kind of buy a chunk and hold it for the anticipated demand to go up and then exit that position. So it's a bit more of a trading market in that regard. It functions like a pretty standard commodity. But it just the demand is just going up, right? And that's, I think, the really key thing to understand is we look forward into the future where people have to make good on these commitments around being net zero. And then, you know, if you step back, there's the sort of social good aspect of it. You're helping, you're bringing more liquidity to the market, helps more of these projects come online, which contribute to the fight to climate change. But yeah, there's just a really good trading opportunity here.
Okay. Kenny, do you have do you want to ask anything about how the app works or what?
Yeah, well, I was just waiting for these guys to finish it. I mean, so obviously, you know, there's not much access to the, you know, the sort of retail investor in this space. So that's obviously what the problem that Aura's trying to solve. Mm-hmm. Can you maybe give us a sort of a roadmap to, you know, to when the app is launched, and, you know, what the sort of next 3 to 6 months are for Aura, and what we can expect to see coming out of the team?
Yeah, so we're getting very, very close to launch. You can download the app right now on the App Store for Apple devices and sign up for the waitlist. And we're going to be welcoming small groups of users from that waitlist coming up very shortly here. And then what I think you'll see from us over the next few months is just because, as we talked about, there's like a diverse set of projects in the voluntary carbon market, an increasing kind of breadth of carbon credits for investors to choose from, right? You don't just want to get into you wouldn't want to open Robinhood and see all that they have for offer is one stock, right? And so we're really kind of helping curate the vast market of carbon credits for the average retail investor. And then creating experience like we talked about it at the start, right? It's easy. They can see their portfolio at a glance. They can see prices in a market where it's been previously very, very difficult to find pricing unless you're a large commodities house. And then the ability to kind of track and own and honestly, even retire a credit if they wanted to offset their own emissions. Not really the end kind of point here, but just easy to buy and sell different kinds of carbon based on their own personal sentiment or where they see the opportunity, and kind of expanding from there. We're intending to have more than one kind of carbon available over the next 3 to 6 months for people to get started with. And we think that now is the right time to launch something like this because it just historically hasn't been available. But we see ever increasing awareness and concern about climate related events. Certainly we have a big moment happening in the climate space at the end of this month in COP28 in Dubai. So the conversation is right, or the conversation is at the right time. And I think, you know, if I'm an average person and I'm seeing all these companies make these commitments and I want to be able to participate, now there hasn't been a better time to do it. And so that's really our goal over the next 3 to 6 months is have the app open to an ever increasing group of people, an ever increasing amount of different carbon projects that they can trade in. And quite frankly, I think, you know, build some wealth and help the planet at the same time.
Yep, definitely. And obviously, you guys have got a sort of first mover advantage, I would say, in the UK, because I've done a quick bit of research. I couldn't see anyone else really listed anyway. Obviously, you guys just listed in the Aquis Exchange, you know, three months ago. So, I mean, you've got that sort of first mover advantage, and obviously, you know the share price has reacted pretty well to that already. And you've got the bonus of being cashed up as well, because obviously you've raised some funds right at the IPO set out.
Yeah,
good place to be in.
It's a fantastic place to be in, and we're really excited about it. And I think Kenny, just that first mover advantage is such a huge opportunity for us. You're right. There are sort of, for the retail investor, there's been nothing like this before, and there are. Mostly what's been marketed to individuals is the opportunity to buy an offset to retire against your own emissions, and that's it. And yet you've got big institutions, big companies who are participating and quite frankly profiting in this market. And so really it's the right time to open it up to retail. It needs to be opened up to retail. And we think that doing that also helps improve the health of the market, right? It's going to bring in greater transparency. And so, we're in a lucky position to be that first mover, to really kind of launch this in the UK. And quite frankly, there's really no one doing it around the world, to be honest with you.
Definitely not. And obviously we're going to speak to you again, Kyle, because obviously this, you know, the carbon market, and it needs a lot of education. You know, it's a bit, we keep going back to crypto, but I'm still learning about crypto and I've been in it for years. You know, every day is a school day with crypto, so it is. So I imagine the carbon market will evolve as well, you know, as the demand increases. So we're going to have a few podcasts, I think, and we're going to talk about education for everybody as well to understand it, because it's still, you know, a lot for us to understand. So we look forward to having you back on, hopefully in the next 2 or 3 weeks, and we can just do bite-sized chunks.
I'll put a shameless plug in here, maybe for the podcast offtakes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, so that you can you know, there's lots of opportunity to learn about the carbon market there. But just even going to auracarbon.com, clicking on our learn section, mm-hmm. and we're posting really kind of every day, trying to build up that educational content to help people answer these questions. And so there's lots about, you know, what is avoidance versus removal? What does a registry look like? What is a carbon credit? I think the thing, questions people probably want to ask and have answers to before they participate. And so we're really trying to democratize access to this market and demystify it for the average person.
Perfect. Sounds like a great place to finish and continue this conversation in the next few weeks. Mark, do you get anything to
No, add? I don't think so. That's been very good. It's nice to know about your background and how you're set up there for Aura, and get a little bit of an insight there, get the cogs turning on carbon credits. And I look forward to doing a lot more detailed discussions, perhaps, on the different ways we can invest in carbon credits, what each ones are, and looking at some projects in more detail, maybe as some examples. But I think for now, that's been fantastic, Carl. Thank you very much. And I know we'll be talking again a lot more. So thank you very much for your time today. And of course, I wish you all the best with everything. You know, I know we'll be talking a lot, but I hope the final preps for the app launch go well. And you can get it out. Yeah. I'm on the waiting list, so if you can speed that up in any way particular, and I would definitely appreciate it, because I'm fantastic. Eager to get on and have a play.
Yeah, I'll do my best there. And thank you so much for the time, gents. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to our next conversations.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Carl. Okay.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fair Ben and Russell. Tune in next time.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.